Good afternoon. Welcome to another episode of the Downstairs Care Out There blog podcast. My name is Mitchell Thomas. I'm coming to you on Thursday, the 12th of March from sunny Leeton. And today I'm going to talk about inter-hospital transfers, particularly centering around long-distance inter-hospital transfers that we tend to see a lot of in the country. I'll also sidetrack into some special considerations and what you really need to be on top of during the long distance transfers. Firstly, I'll preface by saying that long distance transfers from a peripheral hospital to a larger base hospital are very common if you're planning to work in a rural and remote location. And all in all, the inter-hospital transfer can be kind of like a scene job. You want to arrive, get a brief idea of what's going on from the clinical staff that have been taking care of the patient before you. Once you've done that, have a quick chat to the patient, make sure they're comfortable, make sure their analgesia is adequate, keeping in mind that some of the country roads can be quite bumpy, and if they have orthopaedic injuries or abdominal conditions, this can exacerbate the pain that they're feeling. So you need to develop a plan for adequate analgesia en route. I'll also take this moment to mention that if the patient isn't NPO, if they are allowed to eat, and your journey is going to take place over a meal time and be a 2-3 hour journey, it might be worth seeing if you can take a road sandwich from the hospital, because nothing makes your patient grumpier than arriving at a large base hospital, having to wait on your stretcher, than being quite hangry. For those who've never heard of hangry, it's a combination of hungry and angry, and that's that rage that overcomes you as that blood sugar starts to dip. And if you're already in pain, being hungry is not fun. So in the same way that we ensure that we have a full stomach and empty bladder before we go out on a long call, you need to ensure that same consideration is given to your patient. If the patient can toilet themselves and they're not catheterized, it's worth A, emptying a catheter bag if they are catheterized, but B, allowing them the opportunity to go to the toilet before they get on the ambulance stretcher if they're able to. Also, while you're at the sending hospital, that's the perfect time to ensure that all your patient's documentation is ready to go. Any medications that need to be continued are attached to the patient and running through syringe drivers or infusion pumps, and that you're happy to maintain those infusions. Obviously, in ambulance, we don't start some of the medications that they have in hospital, but we can maintain that infusion over the course of the transport. Things that are commonly seen are nitroglycerin for high-risk ACS patients and insulin in DKA. Take this opportunity to branch into some of these special populations that you'll be transporting. We'll start with the youngest, the pediatrics. Okay, this is the perfect opportunity if you have a kid in the back of the car, they're not too sick, and you're transporting them from a peripheral hospital to a big base hospital to get them comfortable in the ambulance. Make sure that mum's close by, make sure they can see mum. Don't limit the amount of comfort items they can bring. If they have a favourite blanket and stuffed toy, that's perfectly fine on the stretcher. I can't emphasise enough that you really want to take this opportunity with children to show them that the ambulance isn't a big scary place, that we aren't the boogeyman. And above all, as we all know, we have it repeated into us ad nauseam. Don't lie to kids. Don't tell them you're not going to give them an injection. If you do have to give them an injection, just keep it honest. Next comes up to our elderly and geriatrics. As we know, ambulance stretchers aren't the most comfortable. They are designed in a lot of places to be spinally rated, which means they do have quite a firm mattress. And sitting on that mattress for quite a deal of time can bring a lot of pain to some of our elderly population. So try and consider that when preparing to transport them. Consider adding additional padding under the buttocks, back, hips, shoulders, and definitely this is that time not to keep the pillow in the back of the ambulance, but to use every pillow you have available to you to ensure that this patient is comfortable. Okay, those two populations are fairly easy to deal with. Now I want to break into what I think was the main aim of this podcast, and this is to talk about the acute behavioural disturbance or the rural psychiatric transfer. Usually this would be going from a peripheral hospital, and it would be a patient here in New South Wales. That patient may be under a Schedule 1, which is a emergency treatment and examination order. They may or may not have been seen via video link at the time that you're transferring. It's important to establish all that and what is going on before you leave the hospital, because once you leave the hospital, it becomes incredibly hard to get information. You want to consider what services you may require. If the person is voluntary, calm, maybe has had an oral dose of a sedative medication, and you believe that they are safe to transfer, then you're well within your rights to do so. If the person has the possibility of violence, it's not out of order to request the attendance and escort via a police service in whichever state you may be operating. As with all psychiatric jobs, it's important to exercise minimal restraint. You need to keep the patient safe, but you need to at all times maintain their dignity. If the patient's voluntary, not a risk to themselves or others, then it is unreasonable to place restraints on that patient. Obviously, another important point is that you do your own mental health exam at the hospital, your own risk assessment, and you decide what you're going to do with this patient in terms of requesting assistance, requesting sedation, administering your own sedation if that's within your protocols. You need to plan your journey to the receiving hospital. In the aeromedical world, this is obviously very different. I can't speak to their experience because I operate all on the road. But if we are travelling to a receiving centre that is quite a distance away, we're talking 2, 3, 4 hours, oftentimes there'll be a nearby hospital in a town that we pass through. It's also important that we know where the police stations are, because if we have an issue en route and the patient becomes a danger to themselves or to us, we need to know where our backup's coming from. We need to be able to accurately describe our location at all times, because sometimes the GPS in the car doesn't work when we're further out, and especially when we're outside mobile reception. The radio may be the only means of contact we have with the outside world. Knowing the location of hospitals en route is also very important, because if we're not licensed to administer further sedation and the patient becomes violent, aggressive, agitated, a danger to themselves or to us, we need to know where we can take that patient to a safe location, regain control of that situation, and continue the transfer or have further assessment done for what may be causing this problem and continue on. Obviously, it bears saying that if at any point you believe the patient's inappropriate for road transport by your level of clinician, you should be talking to a manager or a higher clinical level about what can be done there. It may be that you may not be able to provide ongoing sedation in a patient that you deem to be of medium risk for violent or aggressive behaviour. It may be that the patient is completely inappropriate for transport by ambulance, and in that case, retrieval may need to be initiated to get that patient safely to their destination. Because that's what this all is all about. As much as this podcast is about telling you how to think about special patients in long-distance transfers, it's also about impressing upon you that the patient comes first. If you can do anything to make your patient's journey more comfortable, you need to do that. If the patient requires ongoing doses of pain relief to make them comfortable on a journey, you need to be doing that. If they require treatment en route, you'd do that. You know, we wouldn't leave a patient without treatment at the roadside. And this is really an opportunity on the inter-hospital transfer to provide some good treatment to a lot of patients that have a lot of very interesting pathologies going on sometimes that you wouldn't necessarily see out on the roadside. I'll get off my soapbox now and circle back around to what I was saying. So, as I said, reversing agitation, it could be that the patient is agitated due to fear or anxiety. They could be hungry. They could need to go to the toilet. These are all things that you need to consider, not only on your journey, but before your journey. If the opportunity can be afforded to allow patients to toilet, eat, and make themselves comfortable before the journey, that opportunity should be afforded to every patient that you transport at any time, be that from a scene or from hospital to hospital. I want to mention toileting in particular. We have a number of toileting options available to us in the ambulance service. Often we'll see urine bottles like they have in hospitals, the plastic ones. We have a small disposable urine bottle that's a plastic bag with some crystals in it to absorb the urine, attached to a small cup that the patient can use, and we also carry bedpans. I'll take this moment to mention that all those are great things. They've been used in hospital for many years, and you're worth brushing up on and knowing how to use them for that occasion that you do have a patient who needs to go to the toilet in the back of the ambulance, which is quite a common occurrence in rural practice. I'll also mention that a lot of the time the patient can be toileted adequately at a roadside stop. If all throughout Australia there are numerous rest stops. If your patient's ambulant and you're transferring them for hand surgery or any kind of pathology where they are ambulant and they can walk, obviously I'm not advocating walking patients where there's a risk to their health if they walk, but sometimes we transport patients who are perfectly capable of ambulating, have been in the hospital, and only need the bed for transport to their receiving centre. It's perfectly okay to take those patients to the toilet in a rest stop or at a truck siding on the side of the road. That's going to do more for their dignity than trying to use a bedpan in the back of a cramped ambulance, which will further annoy them, because I don't know if you've ever tried to use a bedpan in the back of an ambulance. There's not a lot of room, especially if the patient is larger and is barely fitting on the stretcher as it is. It can be quite an uncomfortable and humiliating experience to have to go to the toilet in front of someone. And I think patients universally prefer to use the porcelain if they can. Now, this is, of course, just my opinion based on what I have done in the past and what I know other people to do all around the world. Obviously, if your system has protocols or procedures forbidding this, don't do it. You don't need to risk your job and put yourself in danger. But like I said, at all times we're trying to exercise minimal discomfort upon any patient that we're transporting in any group or for any pathology. So I think that allowing them the opportunity to toilet themselves properly and in private does a lot for their journey with you. The next most important part of most inter-hospital transfers is talking to people. You will meet people who absolutely do not want to talk to you. That's okay. If they don't want to talk to you, that's fine. If they want to read the paper, play on their iPad, text people on their phone, perfectly all right. But if someone wants to interact with you on the journey, you may not be a talkative, sociable person, but let them do that. If they want to talk about something, give them an ear. A lot of the time, you'll find that people have some really interesting stories to tell. I know, especially out in my part of the world, we often transport a lot of people who are quite elderly and have been there for a long time. And I really enjoy having that living history in the back of the car. I enjoy being able to ask about the towns that we're passing through, and they will have a story for every single one. I really enjoy finding out more about the history of the area, the people that live there, why the towns exist, and little bits and pieces that I never would have found out otherwise. It's a truly interesting opportunity to have the option to talk to someone about where they've lived, what they've done. And there are some people out here that are so interesting. There are people who've worked the land their entire life and have a story that is unheard of anywhere else in the world. There are people who spend years at a time out in the bush and only come back to major towns every now and then. All other times, they live and work miles and miles from anywhere. So if you're a paramedic student or a young provider and you're not very good at talking to people, now's the time to learn. It's a vital skill in paramedics to be able to be outgoing and personable. You need to sell yourself, you need to gain the trust and build a relationship with everyone in the room, be that at a scene, be that at a hospital. You need to let people know the minute you walk in there that you are there for them, you are listening, and that you are ready to deal with whatever they throw at you. Okay guys, sorry, this one's kind of blown out to over 15 minutes. It was only supposed to be a quick podcast. Coming up next, I'll have a podcast on scene safety, in particular, not only relating to at the scene of a motor vehicle accident, but in the face of a violent or aggressive patient, what to do, how to act, and what you need to be aware of as you walk through the door. Hopefully I should have another exciting discussion coming up with one of the friends of the show who's been a long-time supporter of us, but we'll wait and see what happens on that one. That can be a little surprise. This has been Mitchell Thomas for the Downstairs Care Out There blog podcast, and I hope you've enjoyed this and gotten something out of it. I hope that I've made you think about what you do on an inter-hospital transfer. If you have anything to add or want to get a discussion started, you can get me on Twitter. I'm at JRParamed. You can email me from the website or leave a little question or a statement in the comments box and I'll get back to you. I'm always looking for guests to come on the show to have a chat. We've got some really exciting podcasts coming up in the works. Life did kind of get in the way there for a little while. I had a new dog arrive on my doorstep. I just got engaged to my long-term girlfriend, so we've been planning a wedding and the blog and podcast kind of got away from me for a little while there, but now that all that's done, I'm back and I should hopefully be producing some really quality content this year and something that you can learn from. I hope you've had a good time listening to this podcast. Above all, stay safe out there. I'd also take a moment to mention that if you're coming to SMAC, the Social Media and Critical Care Conference in Chicago, I'll be there, so hunt me down by talking to me on Twitter. I'd love for anyone to say hi. I'll be saying hi to a few people, hopefully this time. And, you know, if you want to talk to me about getting on the podcast maybe, that's definitely an opportunity. I'm always willing to talk to anyone who's got an interesting idea. It certainly beats standing here doing a monologue in front of the microphone. I hope you're all having a good time. Wherever you are in the world, be it morning, afternoon, evening, on shift. So take care and goodbye.